Wouldn't it be great if three idiots picked apart each episode of your favorite podcast?
We do that. Wouldn't it be great if we discussed the newest episode, ongoing theories, and predictions for what comes next?
We do that. Wouldn't it be great if they didn't ruin the podcast at all and kept everything spoiler-free?
We don't do that. You've been warned.
We do that, a Taz Fancast. I'm your co-host, Chris.
And I'm your co-host, Jake. Also, Ockerville River's slightly less known boy, Black Friday boy.
Oh, man, that was so bad. I'm your other co-host, Colin.
This week, Amnesty, episode 18.
Jake, I'm not going to be able to get that horrible little joke out of my head. Black Friday boy. Quick synopsis for you guys. They're finally getting to the meat of the mystery in this arc. They take Billy for an adventure at Indrid's, and then they split the party with Doc going and collecting some copper. Aubrey relishing in holding somebody captive. And Ned solving the mystery, sort of. So that's all very obviously high level, and there's a lot more to dig into. But we actually had some pretty good story progression, I felt, this episode.
Yeah, they left us sort of hanging for a little while, but I think we came back to some really good episodes and a nice meaty take on the narrative.
Yeah, no, and I think that in addition to that narrative, there were also, like, we got some cool fight scenes, and we got some cool character development. So I think, you know, overall, this was a solid episode.
So where should we start? I think we had a couple things that I know we want to get to about the plot itself, because there's a lot of, I think your point about character development is probably the best place to start, actually, Jake, because we got some good moments this time.
Yeah, so I really think, and we'll be jumping around a little bit, I think, story-wise, but I thought it was very interesting, a lot of the choices Travis made as Aubrey to not only take Keith sort of as captive, but then when there was a very obvious out presented to her down in the infirmary where he's like, wait, was that goat man real? Instead of being like, oh, no, let's get you to a hospital and play it off, she really dug in with, yeah, that's real. Yeah, I can do magic. Yeah, look at my fire fingers, and like threatened to burn him from the inside out.
That was a lot. That was a lot to take.
That was kind of gnarly.
Yeah, and it was interesting because, like, I didn't expect that from Aubrey, but I'm all for, you know, finally a character dies. Sort of, Aubrey thinks she's killed one of the goat men, Like, is this Aubrey turning dark side?
I thought that was an interesting mechanical thing, because I felt like it's a weird thing to look at the success as being, like, she rolled for, or Travis rolled for success, so Aubrey's creation was then doing exactly what she set out to do, but it seems like also in a way, like, the goal of it was not to kill the creature. So it seems like a success would have necessitated that something happens to prevent undue harm to the target, I think.
Yeah, and I thought it was interesting, and correct me if I'm wrong, doesn't Griffin say that she kills the creature?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that he says it succinctly in those words, but definitely alludes to the fact that, yes, that is just a minion creature. It does not have a lot of health. Three harm is a pretty big deal.
Yeah, so when it shows back up later, it's like, oh, then you see the goat man you thought you had killed. It's like, well, yeah, but you told us that.
Yeah, I wonder if that was just a...
I mean, it could also be because, you know, there's magic going on. And if this tree is and I mean, this gets to another part of the story, but, like, if this tree has its roots growing everywhere, and it's sort of spread these spores everywhere, you know, that mention of what you thought you had killed doesn't then reflect a sort of misstep in the storytelling. It reflects an additional power or a mystery about the relationship between these things.
But isn't there a difference between you thought you had killed versus you had killed but is alive anyway? Like, sort of,
yes,
like an undead creature?
Yes, but a character wouldn't know that in that moment. Ned wouldn't know that in that moment.
Yeah, I don't know.
No one went and looted the bodies.
I mean, that's true, but I think it's just a sort of distinction that, you know, when Gryffindor presents himself as this, as the narrator, right? Like, and it's the choice in words that makes it seem that this thing was never actually dead, versus something that was somehow resurrected from the dead or given new life or reanimated in some way.
And I don't know that that's the case. Like, to be clear, I think it's a possibility. And I think you're right. Like, there is ambiguity there that we just don't have the answer to yet.
And it probably doesn't matter. That was just me trying to rib on Griffin a little bit, because it was like, yeah, we thought he was dead because you told us he was, or clearly alluded to that fact.
Right. Yeah. I think it is a little tricky, and it certainly belies, like, God damn it, I've said that word a lot and wrong very frequently. Fuck. I think it's important, a distinction narrative wise, to be like, did Aubrey kill this creature? Because that's a character development point that I want them to get back to and see what she feels about that. But also, if Aubrey killed this creature and it is back from the dead, that is one thing. Whereas if Aubrey thought she killed this creature, but actually it has, you know, one health left, that's something else entirely. Like, if we're dealing with a bomb that's a tree, and that can resurrect things, that's a very different story than you almost killed it, which is much less exciting.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think Aubrey would react in different ways.
Yeah, so I guess maybe we'll just see where they take the roleplay of it. I'll be curious if... I feel like in the way that Griffin has treated this story, the next thing that happens is hopefully the wrap-up, but there's also got to be several moments of reflection on Aubrey's part where she thinks about the quote-unquote evils she's done in the last hour or two in terms of threatening physical harm against people and possibly killing a creature that would, you know, warrant a solo scene where they reflect on that a little bit.
Well, and I like that. I think we got some of that after she threatened Keith, you know, where we saw that, oh, this was bravado. Like, she wasn't capable of doing it then. So, I mean, I guess it was good that the bluff wasn't called, but also, you know, confidence makes confidence, right? So, like, is she closer to being able to make that choice now? Because she's pretended it once.
Well, and if she's seen sort of the effectiveness of it.
Yeah. Or if the stakes get higher, you know, is that something that she'd be willing to resort to?
Yeah. Well, and I do think as a mechanical thing, it does become a question of does a success of... Like, does rolling a success necessitate maximum damage, or are they going to get a little more nitty-gritty of rolling a success means that Aubrey can set out to do exactly what she wants to do, which becomes more of a nuanced magical ability? You know, is it rolling a medium success becomes a more blunt force application of magic, whereas a full success is you are able to deliver precisely the amount of gust of wind or create the fireball of exactly the right size?
No, I think that's a really good idea for that. And I think that as Aubrey's skills are honed and develop, maybe that becomes more of an option. But definitely now, I think she's still too inexperienced as a character to let her mechanics operate that way.
And I think some of it is Travis has to be very specific with Griffin as to what he's trying to accomplish. Like, is he trying to knock the... Is he trying to inflict harm on the goat man or just push him back? Or something right, to that effect.
And that's definitely... I think it definitely will be up to Travis to... If that mechanic wants to happen, Travis will need to push for it more than letting Griffin determine how a role is interpreted. So if any of the players want to get to that sort of granularness of a success, that's they're going to have to drive that. I don't think Griffin's going to prompt them to make those choices.
Yeah, I would agree. Especially with the way this arc season has been going, I don't feel like it's going to be very... that's going to be something Griffin pushes them on.
Yeah.
So maybe at this point we should jump over to Duck and his scenes. He obviously pinned one of the goat men down, the goat man with the shovel in the first scene, and then went over and talked to, I believe her name is Juno?
Yeah, Other Ranger Juno.
And this wasn't the most active scene. He didn't have a lot of development this episode, but I did think it was amusing how easily Justin slipped back into just lying very comfortably. Oh yeah, the Hornets.
It's the Justin McElroy Appreciation Corner.
Well, and this one I don't like. Isn't Duck is known for being a bad liar?
Oh, and but, like that's why I thought that it was so great that he had this moment of brilliance. Like he had this idea, and then he couldn't keep it. Like it but passed right through his fingers.
He did keep, like, from what I could tell, Juno believes that there is a marijuana growing operation. It's just that she didn't understand what was going on when he was talking to himself in the shack or whatever.
See, and my interpretation was that then that all came into question. Was like, oh wait, you're messing with me. And maybe that's too much of a read on my part. I'm not sure, but
yeah, I honestly wasn't sure where we were drawing the line at Juno's knowledge of what Duck was getting at. Yeah, because I also thought that Juno. I thought we were ending the scene with Juno thinking, "Yes, the Hornets are doing a marijuana grow." Also, Duck is an idiot and thought he could trick me into thinking he was going undercover by to avoid as these questions I was asking.
Yeah, as a teenager.
Yes.
Cute Steve Buscemi from 30 Rock.
Yeah, basically.
Hello, fellow kids.
I am sort of curious. I feel like the connection that was delivered to us of why Juno was a fixture of one of the accidents feels tenuous at best, but I wonder if it's because Justin just very succinctly was like, oh, they have something that can see the future on their team, and that's why all this is happening. Because it seems like, you know, why is Juno a target? Oh, it's because they didn't want Doc to get to this moment where he's talking to Juno. But on the other hand, by creating Juno as the center of a thing, they were going to investigate that further. So it seems like a weird out for why Juno was involved that I don't fully get.
Yeah, right. It's like by trying to prevent it, they have caused it.
And I wonder if that's just they don't have like a multifaceted view of how the past is going to shake out. Just that.
Well, and I mean, I think if we look back the same way, like when Danimal died, the boys hadn't met the Mothman yet. So like,
yeah, but
this we could say the same thing if Danimal had survived. If they had interacted with that in a way that prevented that accident from happening.
But didn't they take stuff from the back of Danimal's truck?
Yes.
Yeah, like tools.
So their point was to get tools. The point in hurting Juno was only to avoid Duck finding these copper nails or something. That's what it seems to be.
Are you proposing, Jake, they're trying to eliminate all the rangers so that no one goes into the forest?
That's sort of where my thinking was going, because if they were smart enough to steal fertilizer from a general store, what's going to be next to the fertilizer? Oh, probably shovels and shears and shit.
Yeah. And I thought it was an interesting
So there was
thing.
An added benefit of getting stuff out of the truck, but my read was that the core goal was to get rid of the Rangers.
Yeah, I wonder, because there was Griffin was pointing out that there's a bunch of moments where they didn't really investigate the right thing. And I don't know, I don't really fully understand how they would have arrived at, like, did they just not ask what's missing from the store? I thought they sort of went through a not thorough, but a good enough investigation of how, what things that happened at the store that maybe that would have come up. But I don't know what questions he was expecting them to ask.
Yeah, I don't know what else they could do.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. And, I mean, I think they handled it in a similar way that we probably would have playing that out. But I do, I did like that sort of branchedness that Griffin described. Like, oh, hey, there are other answers out there. There are other ways to reach the solutions, but you picked the ones that you did, and that's where you are.
Yeah,
yeah. Oh, this is the information that's cut off from you now.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. They, like, I don't think they're supposed to befriend a goat man and do everything they've done with Billy. And I think that's very cool of them, like, working outside the system. But there is it is interesting with all the information that Griffin sometimes spoon feeds to us and to the guys playing. It's interesting that he's like, well, you guys didn't ask, you know, what's missing from aisle three on the third shelf from the back or whatever. Yeah.
I'll be very curious to hear that part of the Adventure Zone after this to see if they get into like how Griffin was thinking he was laying clues out for them and what things he was really frustrated they missed or what things they were just so close to getting but didn't get there. Or, you know, I wonder if upon reflection, if they all sort of talk about it, that the things that Griffin thought would be clues just needed a very specific set of role plays to end up at that weren't maybe feasible for them to arrive at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and that's a place where I guess I also wonder this hanging Garfield shopping list means that they are primed already to look for three very specific items. And I wonder if that might make it harder to see some of these less apparent narrative pathways, because they're like, well, that's not the little Easter egg hidden item that I'm supposed to be looking for, so I'm only going to look for these things.
Yeah, and I don't know that. I think a lot of the situations have been set up in such a way that they haven't known enough about the overarching plot until probably right now, it sounds like, based on, you know, the write-ups they did and sort of fixing their Roll20 situation, that I don't know if they would have been able to even put together stuff to be looking at other instances to see how stuff was playing out.
Yeah, no, I'd agree.
I would like to dive into sort of a corollary to maybe Duck's thing, but what... well, let's jump over to Ned first, and then I want to get into some wider-ranging discussion.
Sure, yeah.
Ned's snowmobile seems to be wildly impractical as a vehicle if we get around Kepler. And I just don't... I'm all for the ridiculous, and I think it needs more of it. But this just seems like ridiculous in the wrong way. It's not funny or good. It's just your snowmobile's too big. And I don't like it.
Yeah, it seems like an outrageous... I don't even know what to call it. What do you say? It was like an 8-person cab?
Yeah, it's fucking huge.
Yeah,
it's a tank.
Yeah, is that like a snow? It's like a snow bus.
It's like the things they show pictures of them using in the like Arctic.
Yeah,
or Antarctic.
Yeah, that seems insane.
Yeah, I so much love the like old school sedan, like the coupe, giant coupe that he would have been driving, but the snowmobile is so, I think, out of character for Ned, and also just would never actually work.
Yeah. Yeah.
And why?
And why would you have, I mean, something like that makes sense in a place like Antarctica, in a place which, granted, West Virginia gets more snow than some of the surrounding states, but it's not like it snowed 24 7.
Yeah, I mean, the window would be so narrow where snow things would be necessary as opposed to just, like, an ATV or something like that. Like, I get you're going through the backwoods and you might need something more rugged than your regular sedan kind of deal, but a snowcat doesn't seem like the right answer.
Yeah, I agree. I did think it was also interesting, and I mentioned this before, just how hard it is for the boys to lie about their roles now since they're using Roll 20.
Yeah.
Because Ned, in general, didn't have a lot of great roles, at least early on, during the fight.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know how I feel about that.
It does create an interesting thing where it seems like, which is maybe the point, and this is a larger discussion maybe on what the point of the narrative roleplay would be, but Griffin has all of this freedom to make changes because none of his actions are dice dependent, but it locks the player characters into a lot of choices that aren't very fun narratively.
Yeah, yeah, and I've, I don't know, maybe we want to finish up on the story beats, because
I think this is the natural way for the conversation to go, so let's...
Well,
I always like to point out natural transitions while I'm having conversations.
I think,
hey, this seems like a good moment where I'd like to pivot to a new topic. Allow me to begin my new topic. Thanks, Pert Hapley.
Well, what I'm saying, it only got awkward when you pointed it out. I was just saying we should keep doing what we're doing, but no, I kind of is.
I was actually going to do the same thing.
That's my impression of you, Chris, in case you didn't know.
It's very good.
It's kind of like when Clint stopped, or Travis stopped, Griffin. It's like, hey, Griffin, I just want to let you know that I'm really swept away right now.
Yeah.
Oh, fucking perfect. Thanks for ruining the flow.
That was good. That'll take us all the way home.
I one thing that was really driven home for me listening this week is I do not like this system. And I really miss, like, D&D with its, you know, long history and sort of rich rule set, like really widespread rule set where there's a rule or definition for almost anything that doesn't seem to exist. At least with how the boys are implementing it. But for systems like Advantage or things that, you know, a strictly defined rule set that you can kind of push the boundaries of and make work for whatever story you're trying to tell, this, without the NPCs actually taking actions and Griffin just responding to dice rolls, and it all just kind of seems wishy-washy. As we go through it, I'm just like, I really do not like this system.
And I think I'm finding myself having a similar struggle. And I've noticed it when I've listened to a couple other podcasts. You know, I noticed it when listening to Friends at the Table and a couple other things where they use the system that relies on the definition of what a mixed success or a full success is being up to the GM. Because I think there's a beauty in the D&D system of having straight up contests of numbers, and that, like, you need to write the narrative of what happens when a 13 meets a 3, not mixed success. What is this in the broadest sense of whatever you want it to be? I think you're right, Colin, that the narrowness of the D&D rule set does make it a little easier to follow, and I think adds interest into the podcast, that luck plays a bit more of a chance, but then there are moments where you're basically given a scene of this, you know, goes great for you and terrible for them. How does it play out? As opposed to this goes medium good. What's that mean for everyone? Mm-hmm. And that all of the, as I've said a couple times, all of that is given over to the GM, not really a player character choice.
Yeah. And I'll agree. I think that I like when, you know, a player controlled monster or a GM controlled monster or character does poorly too. It makes it feel a little more natural rather than, you know, only like you're saying, only ever hearing about it from one perspective.
And I was thinking about that moment where Ned charges at the other goat and says, I run and make a big scare sound, and that fails. But if the other version of that is that he does like a performance check or intimidation check or whatever, and he gets a one, or the does a, the creature tries to save against it, and that comes out very differently. And I think it tells a different story, and I think it means a little bit more to objectively say, like, it's a full failure, it's nothing happens. Like, that is a very fine line example, and I think it's maybe too nuanced for the point I'm trying to make. But in that moment, I wanted a different role and a different way of it to happen.
Well, I think one of the ones that struck me is when Doc was like on top of the goat man, it was like, I'm just going to punch him and try and punch him unconscious. And Griffin's like, all right, roll. The guy, he rolls like a 10 or a 13 or something. And because of the system, the goat man has to inflict harm on Duck as well. Yeah. It's like, oh, well, actually, you guys roll around a little bit. He ends up on top, punches you a few times. And then, you know, you get back on top of him and punch him unconscious. And that doesn't make sense in the story. Like, or if there was a strength check because you're trying to pin somebody and there's an actual struggle that you can play out, that makes sense. But to have somebody roll a complete success and then...
Yeah. Well, and I think that that's even, like you were saying before, Colin, sort of an issue of semantics, that Griffin used the word pinned, which means something, whereas if he had said, yeah, okay, you have, you know, you are containing the goat man on the ground or something like that, opens the window to then, oh, but he's able to fight back a little bit. If you say the word, you have him pinned, that means he is immobile and in your control, and you should be able to do whatever you need.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, and some of that is like the semantics that Griffin uses, and you have to be really careful with the language, but I used to think there were several spots like that throughout this episode where I didn't think that this system was just that good for telling a story.
I almost wonder if they are misimplementing it in a way that is, like, they are taking too granular approach to roles. So instead of them being like, oh, he struggles with the goat man and you have it pinned, now let's cut to whatever Aubrey does, that the fullness of it is... Justin wants to struggle with the goat man, pin it, and then knock it out. And that all should play out as one role and sort of complete that action. Don't leave any of those hanging moments where you have, if you arrive at, you have him pinned, now what? We can't leave that action. That all needs to be wrapped up in one action where things complete.
Mm-hmm. And I think in a related way, I think that was an interesting part where when Duck was talking to Juno, and he was like, well, in my head, the camera has just panned away.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I think that there is a way that we are... Because I sort of had the same impression. It was like, okay, well, there's a natural, like, this action is done.
Yeah, that's the closest thing. I'm going to need some of those nails. Fade out.
Yeah, right? And I think a system that has more discrete and codified actions helps us understand when the story is moving along.
Yeah.
You know, and so not that it would necessarily apply to that situation perfectly, but just to say that, you know, we can understand the story from different ways by the options that are given with the players have to interact with it.
Yeah. And I think that moment you're talking about too points out that they are relying a little bit, I think maybe a little bit too heavily on just freeform narrative to tell the story. Like, Griffin wants these moments to happen where the characters are interacting with an NPC and just sort of having a conversation, using that to move the story along. But I don't know that he's necessarily given them enough structure or enough information to really have those in meaningful ways, or whether the players are really embracing it in a way to make it a moment that they own. Because in that moment, he's like, all right, Griffin is thinking, let's continue this conversation with Juno and maybe flesh out their relationship or some more things about what they think. And I think Justin is thinking, I have no more information to share with this person, nor get out of this person. Like, this interaction is over narratively, so why continue?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's an interesting point, too. Kind of comparing it as to, like, who's actually driving the narrative. Because it's supposed to be, like, a collaborative thing, but and I think I've harped on this before, it's clearly like Griffin's narrative.
Yeah, some of the choices are being made in distinct and different ways, but the places they're going and the way information is being doled out, I don't think anything is... I don't know that you could do a truly collaborative story if one person knows all of the answers and everyone else isn't able to contribute a finite factoid to the thing, you know?
Yeah, and there are small bits of world building that he allows them to do.
Yeah, doesn't. Absolutely.
But, and I think, you know, perhaps befriending Billy or taking Billy and turning him into Ryan Gosling, like, wasn't in his plans necessarily. But I don't think it, and I'm just trying to head off that criticism, you know, at the top. I think that's certainly a good point, but I don't think it changes the overall structure.
No, I think it's a side plot that arrives at the same point.
Yeah, and it's all you have to, as a player character, it seems you have to push the right series of buttons in the right order to be able to get an answer out of the DM.
Yeah.
Or GM or keeper or whatever.
Right. Speaking of sort of information that Griffin holds that I feel like we're struggling to get anything useful out of, what's the role of the Hornets in all this? Is that just a fun side plot we're dealing with, or is that going to turn into something? Is the whole thing building up to they're kind of shitty and put copper things in the tree, and that's their reason for existence?
I think that's a great question. I have no idea why they exist. There seems to be a lot of... like, it'll be interesting. I imagine Griffin has some reason for them, and Agent Sterling, and all these odds.
Gone.
And Dr. Harris Bonkers being, you know, MIA. Like, I imagine they're all going to come back into play at some point, but, like, right now they just seem like, you know, junk floating along in the story.
Yeah, very minor little pieces that I don't understand how these things are all going to weave together or be really crucial to getting to our endpoint of, I guess, fighting a really big tree.
Well, and so for me, that's... I'm still having a few questions about what the nature of these sort of otherworldly non-human beings are, right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, Barkley, or I think it was Barkley, was able to say that, you know, hey, these goat men, well, they aren't Sylvan.
Right.
And, well, then, no, you can't take Billy with you because he can't go outside of the mile radius, right? Yeah. But then Indrid was going to leave, and that's fine.
Yeah.
Not to mention, a piece of self-material turns Billy into Ryan Gosling.
Yeah. And so where my head is thinking... and currently that there is sort of this messy middle ground where there are some Sylvan-like beings on our side of the world that aren't Sylvan, that I would imagine that the Hornets are under sort of the auspices of whatever the big bad is and are doing small little things to help open the way between the worlds so that more like Sylvans can come through. That's where that's the theory that I'm trying to build. But again, I think we're still in a place where we don't have all of the answers yet to do so.
Well, and it's just the inconsistent application of these rules, these like homegrown rules of, you know, I thought all Sylphs had to be in like the hot springs once every like 12 hours or whatever it was. That's like, these rules seem to apply when they're narratively required, and then they disappear as soon as they're not.
Yeah, I think Jake's point about, you know, injured is a perfect example of if this is a person who is of the same ilk as the Sylphs, how are they able to operate in a completely different way?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and he works the same way, right? I would imagine that there is a thread in those glasses of his, right?
Right. You know, that certainly seems to be the case.
So.
Also, these guys have lived, sort of transitioning a little bit. These guys have lived. It's a perfectly natural transition. It's going really well. Just want to take a moment, say that.
So smooth. Loved it.
So smooth. these guys have lived in West Virginia like all their lives, and they can't tell snow from cottonwood seeds.
Yeah, that's not great.
How does that make any sense? Suddenly you see a bunch of snow falling. It's not
these
cold.
Things don't melt when I touch them.
Yeah.
So I will say I was in a parking lot the other day and thought it was snowing, and it did take me longer than I'm proud of to identify it as stuff blowing off of a tree nearby. However, don't they talk about it like accumulating on the ground in the first one with the Pizza Hut sign?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so.
So in the air, I will grant them that. On sure. the ground, that shit is not snow. 100%.
Yeah, it's I could totally see it in the air while it's falling. It kind of looks like snow. But the second you touch it, the second you grasp some of it, or the second it falls onto a surface, you can tell it's not snow.
Yeah.
Especially if these guys have been dealing with West Virginia winters for 20 plus years. What the hell are you guys doing?
Yeah, that does seem very, very strange. It also, like, if the tree is the origination point for all of those things, town would have surely noticed, like, I guess a cone of cottonwood seeds coming out and then arriving at a very particular area. Like I think the story was told as sort of it arrived in what I always imagined was like a bubble of snow appearing in their general vicinity and no place else. But if there's an origination point and it goes from there to there, like that's a line that someone could follow back.
Yeah, it's got to move. It's right. Got to be blown on the wind or, you know, whatever's causing it. It's not something, it's not like the Goatmen, it doesn't seem like the Goatmen are harbingers of snow that cause disasters. Instead, they follow cottonwood seeds and steal whatever they're supposed to.
Yeah, it seems like, I'm hoping we'll get a lot more explanation. Since they just really just teased it at the end when Ned discovers it.
Yeah. So, I mean, there are at least two episodes left, right? There's going to be the next episode that, you know, finally gives us answers. And then there will be the
big battle.
The battle. And then there will be a wrap up next Lodger interlude.
Yeah, I think we have three Amnesty episodes left in this arc. Which means we're probably about 4 months away from its end. Especially with the holidays coming around. This shit's not ending until 2019.
I wholly believe that.
I agree.
100%.
Do we want to theorize at all about the tree before we wrap up? My only thought that I wanted to share is they talked about, you know, every time that happened that it began to bring new branches, which I wonder if it ties into like the branching of different timelines based on how choices are made, sort of the way if Indrid could see different futures, like is the tree branching, meaning a decision was made and something is now locked in going to the future. And that's what the tree is. And maybe they're fighting time and something better idea to come in 2 weeks.
Yeah. My read on the talk about, oh, they have something that can see the future too, was that was not an actual theory.
Just like Justin saying something?
Yes.
Okay.
Because I have no evidence to support that fact. And it seems so off the cuff that I just don't feel like it was real.
I don't know that I really have a theory. I do think it's interesting looking sort of drawing a map of the monsters Griffin has introduced thus far. Of, we had an animal one, and then a water elemental one, and now a tree.
So what you're saying is we've had animal and plant and mineral, right?
Right, right.
I mean, no.
Well, is water a mineral? That
it's
seems
not.
It's that not seems an like animal a or a plant, so it's got to be a mineral.
Well, I guess that is how that game works, but that's
yeah, it's a dumb game.
What game is this?
20 questions.
Oh. Well, I was thinking, I was trying to predict what the next one would be. Which clearly it has to be some sort of air monster. It seems the next logical step.
Like a big cloud? Of a vape lord? They're going to fight the vape lord. Which one vapes? It's this one.
I would listen to that. That would be good.
You're going to, no matter what it is, but yeah.
I mean, that's true. That's a good point.
The Pine Guard fights the Vape Lord is definitely a spin. Well, A, that's our episode title, so nailed it. Great job, everybody. Thanks for bringing us here. And two, that is the best new anime coming out of Japan in 2019.
Well, do clouds of cottonwood tree seeds look like...
I'm putting this on Twitter now with a... So that it's proof that we've said this first.
I feel like if you got enough cottonwood seeds like together in a cloud, it could look like vape.
Listen, if we can't tell cottonwood seeds from snow, then surely we can't tell it from vape clouds.
That's true. That's true. Things the Pine Guard is bad at, identifying cottonwood seeds.
Yeah, I mean, I guess sort of their whole... nature sense isn't great, it seems.
Yeah, for somebody who spends all his time in nature.
Yeah, right. We do need to, maybe that's the next episode thing, we do need to talk about how Duck didn't know what cottonwood seeds look like as a West Virginia native who works in the Park Service. That's kind of his jam.
Certainly seems like it should be.
Well, I think that's enough open-ended questions and speculation for this week, and clearly... Boy, oh boy, I just hope we get an Amnesty episode next week to really take us home. Thank you, everyone, so much for joining us for our discussion of episode 18 of Amnesty. We're so glad you could be with us. Sorry we're a day late, but we hope everyone in the United States had a wonderful Thanksgiving and is enjoying Black Friday in whatever way makes you happy. For those of our listeners outside of the U.S., happy Friday. You know, you made it. Great job. We're so glad you're here with us, and we'll hope you'll be with us again in 2 weeks for another episode of We Do That. In the meantime, you can always find us on Twitter at WeDoThat_pod or via email at WeDoThat@gmail.com. WeDoThatPod@gmail.com. I'm going to get them both right one day. Thank you. Thank you so much for all the thoughts and suggestions you send our way. We enjoy reading them so much, and we are so excited to share more of this with you in 2 weeks. Until then, bye, everybody.